When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Metal Mike, and in this episode, I'm joined by my pal Aaron from the website Loud Sound Epicenter, and we discuss an epic matchup. It's Cinderella versus Poison. Yes, we pit the classic albums against each other. We put the original members against each other. At the end, we tally up the points, and we crown the ultimate glam metal champions. Well, hey, speaking of 80s glam metal, check out me and my buds on YouTube doing a ripping cover of Runaway by Bon Jovi. Well, now it's time for a battle that's more epic than Batman versus Superman. It's crazier than Godzilla versus Kong. It's Cinderella versus Poison, and it's time for you to check it out. Well, Aaron, welcome to the 80s glam metal cast, man. How you been?
Hey, I've been well. Thank you for inviting me back.
Hey, no problem, man. We did a great episode. Jeez, I won't say it's almost a year ago. We put Rat against Dokken, and it was a pretty, even matchup. There was a lot of similarities between those bands. And this time, man, I feel like we've got the perfect matchup to do. We're going to do Poison against Cinderella. What do you think?
Yeah, I can't wait, man. There's definitely a lot of similarities with these two bands, for sure.
Big time, big time. But before we jump in, tell everybody about what you do. You've got your website, Loud Sound Epicenter. Tell everybody about that and what you're doing right now.
That's right. So it's become a YouTube channel. It's also called Loud Sound Epicenter on YouTube. I do some commentary on there. And then I'm active on Twitter at AaronWriterAC. So that's where you can find me.
Awesome, man. Best of luck with all that you're doing with that. So back to these guys. You know, these kind of are like the 80s glam metal kings, in my opinion. You know, but for bands that kind of came out in 86, you know, they were the bands that had the image. You know what I mean? They really were driving that glam image, the glam sound. MTV was loving these guys. I know you're a younger guy. You didn't catch this while it was happening. I did. Did you like both these debuts and this everything they came out with when they hit the scene?
Yeah, I did, and it was one of those things where I think they really outdid the image, because that was the thing that was so loud from my perspective. But, you know, a lot of these bands are got a lot more going on, you know, specifically with Cinderella kind of changing sounds halfway through their career. So I just think that these bands have a lot to offer in the same way that Dokken and Rat did when we were talking about them.
Yeah, yeah. So a couple similarities that I've got marked down here. So they're both from Pennsylvania, which is pretty interesting. Both came out in 1986. Both were multi-platinum bands, both loved by MTV in the 80s. They both became headliners right around their second album, and really both infused blues into their styles. Cinderella may be a little heavier than Poison, but Poison did it as well. And they really started to shed their glam image about their second album, both of them. They kept just toning it down with every album. So a lot of things are alike about these guys.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't realize how many similarities there were. That's right, 86, and so that's very strange. But I think Poison was more consistent with their sound, whereas Cinderella kind of started to try different things halfway through. So that definitely does influence which band I prefer. So
for the listeners, what we're going to do is we're going to pit each of their albums against each other. We're going to work backwards, and then we'll pit the individual members against each other. And then we'll see what we're working with the total, and we'll see who wins this epic glam metal battle.
Nice, nice. Perfect.
All right, so we're going to start backwards with their studio albums. We're just going to go with the four main albums that the bands did. So we're going to start with Native Tongue. And I gotta tell you, man, I love Native Tongue. I think this is one of their best, even though it's a big-time departure. And when we talk about infusing blues into the sound, this is the one where Poison went full-on blues rock for this one. And then, you know, obviously bringing Richie Kotzen in was a big change to the sound.
But I like it, man. You know, I think it has some of their coolest songs. I love Until You Suffer Some. I think it's one of their best ballads. But they've got a lot of fun songs, too. They've got Body Talk, Riot Child Ride, 7 Days Over You. And how about Stand? Stand was, I'm telling you, Stand was shocking for me when that came out. You know, here's Poison, you know, with gospel singers singing with them and everything. It was definitely a departure album, man. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I remember the Scream was the standout for me. That's when I realized mm-hmm. that this album is going to be very different. But I still liked it. I think it's very underrated. A lot of this stuff still holds up, even if it is different from their sound.
Yeah, you made a great point, man. It really did stand up. You know, and the problem was for a lot of us, either some people just kind of gravitated away from Poison, moved on to different styles. Maybe with Stand, you weren't really sure what was going on there and you stayed away from it. But I think most people who finally, you know, checked out the album, you know, realized that it's really cool, a lot of interesting stuff. And the musicianship is on a high level. I mean, especially you listen to Ricky Rocket and Bobby Dahl, you know, compare their performances on this to the debut. There's really actually no comparison.
Yeah, that's right.
How about Still Climbing, man? What do you think about Still Climbing?
So Still Climbing for me, this might be surprising. A lot of people probably checked out by this point, but I had put this, as you said, with Poison. This is up there with one of my favorite Cinderella albums because I just think that they really came into their own. A lot of classic tracks on here from Bad Attitude Shuffle. Talk is Cheap, they actually played in like 87.
Yes.
But didn't make it onto an album until, you know, way after. So I just think there's a lot of standout tracks on here. I think a lot of people would like it too.
Yeah. You know, one thing I'll give this album, the award for the best production. I mean, obviously, this makes sense because we're talking about an album that was made, you know, almost 10 years after the debut. So, of course, it's going to sound a lot better. So the technology really caught up with things and it sounds really good. The sad thing about this album is there was literally no promo for it. Like this, I mean, being out there alive when this was all happening and listening to music, this album just came out. This probably was a contractual thing that they just had to puke out their last album. The label didn't care. They didn't promote it. There's no videos. I don't even know if there were singles. Maybe there were, but radio wasn't really clinging on to any of them. For me, I understand where you're coming from, and I do like it too. I think they brought back a little bit more of the heaviness to their music, where they really lost the heaviness on Heartbreak Station. I feel like the metal aspect is back a little bit. But I got to tell you, man, I think this is some of the, for me, I think it's some of their just most weakest, non-memorable songs. Like, I know they weren't trying to write hits, and I think the songs are really cool. I do like Bad Attitude Shuffle, All Comes Down, Blood from a Stone, just super cool songs. Even the title track. Still Climbing is a cool song, but I don't hear the hooks and the melodies that I got from maybe some of their previous efforts. So for me, like I don't feel the songs are as strong, or they're not what I'm used to coming from Cinderella, but that's just my take on it.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. It is a lot heavier and definitely different from the 80s style, so I can definitely understand how it's different from that perspective.
So I think I know where you're going with these two albums. So is Still Climbing your pick?
Yes, Still Climbing is my pick against Native Tongue.
Okay. In mine, you're probably going to guess correctly, is Native Tongue. So that's my pick for that one. I really, really like I said, I don't dislike Still Climbing. I just think it's their weakest effort. I really like Native Tongue quite a bit. I almost think it, I don't know if it's their strongest, but it's up there. You know what I mean? It's got a lot of high quality music. And Richie Kotzen, one thing I didn't mention, he's a great singer. He sings a lot of backups on this, and his voice really stands out. He sings a lot higher than Bret Michaels does. It really helps the sound, changes the sound.
Yeah, that's right. I remember Richie listening to some of the live tracks on another later Poison album. That's right. That's definitely a standout.
Okay, so let's work our way to 1990. Flesh and Blood against Heartbreak Station. Let's lead off with Poison. What are your thoughts on Flesh and Blood?
Yeah, man, this is, even though it's still got, you know, Unskinny Bop, a lot of the commercial stuff, there's still plenty of, like you said, that blues influence.
Yep.
Really continues after Open Up and Say Ah. So I really dig a lot of these songs.
This one, man, I'm going to have to say is probably my favorite Poison album. Some people prefer the earlier two, but I think this is just them you know, coming into their own. Like you said, there's the stuff like Unskinny Bop, Flesh and Blood, that kind of harken back to like the fun Poison of the earlier albums. But there's a lot of depth on this album. You know, when you listen to something like Life Loves a Tragedy, Something to Believe In, this isn't your typical fare, you know, what these guys usually sing about. And I think the musicianship is really high level, especially, man, I'm telling you, if you question the ability of Ricky Rocket, go back and listen to Valley of Lost Souls, man. He's kicking ass on this album. And I went back and I listened to this album last night to get ready for this, and it's kind of raw, man. Even for an album that's like a big multi-platinum album, there's some rawness, and there's a lot of cool stuff going on. And I think CC's spot on. I mean, as we get going here, I'll reveal it. I'm a big Brett fan. I think he's got a cool, distinct voice. I just think these guys are all spot on. And I think what you've got here, too, and I think this is the trend that I see with Poison, is Poison has really, really strong singles. Obviously, when you're selling multiple platinum, you know, your albums are going multiple platinum, you've got strong singles. And I think they really show on this album, too. So I really think they've got some cool stuff going on.
Yeah, in this album specifically, they had, I think, about five of them. And the other standout you didn't mention was Ride the Wind. Just a lot of up-tempo, just feel-good music on here. So I definitely support it.
I love Ride the Wind. That, you know, I should have mentioned that when I've got that written down. I love Ride the Wind. And one thing that happened with this album, and I don't really understand it. I really don't understand it with either of these albums where it happened, but the cover had to be edited because... it was Brett's tattoo, or I think it's Brett's. One of the guys' tattoo that says Flesh and Blood. I'm pretty sure it's Brett. It looks like there's kind of like blood dripping down from Flesh and Blood. And some retailers didn't like that for some whatever reason. I don't think it's that offensive, but they got rid of it. They took the blood drippings off, and it's just more of a clean tattoo on a like later issues of it.
Yeah, I was curious because I think I have the edited version of it, mm-hmm. So I didn't realize what the original controversy was. I know that even like Striper had some problems with retailers, so that's that is interesting to know.
Okay, well, how about Heartbreak Station? This is definitely this is a big departure if you put it up against Night Songs. What do you think of Heartbreak Station?
Yes, as you said, this is definitely a departure, and I remember reading that it's Tom Kiefer's favorite, and to tell you the truth, it's actually my least favorite of the four. I think that it's a little too country-leaning in some places, like One for Rock and Roll.
Yep.
Even though it starts off pretty strong with the first two tracks, there's even some funk stuff on the second track.
Yep.
Very interesting beginning, but it just eventually delves into the, you know, country-leaning blues side, which was a bit much for me.
I remember I bought this album when it came out, and I remember thinking, like, whoa, I don't really know if I like this. but then on the flip side of it, what would tend to happen with me, and I'm sure a lot of old-timers like myself could relate to this, is once you bought an album back in the day, you're pretty invested because you probably paid anywhere between 15 and 17 bucks for the CD. So you were that was a lot of money at the time when you were a kid. And you were invested. So you would play that thing over and over again until you really got into it. And I can remember many times being a kid, listening to this on my Discman in the backseat of my parents' car, and I really got to know this album and got to love it. But what I will say is, as an adult, which is strange, this sometimes this can go either way. I don't like it as much as I did when I got into it as a kid. I really feel like they went off the path way too far with this album. I think it's got strong singles. You know, I think Shelter Me is really strong. More Things Change and Heartbreak Station. I think they're pretty strong singles. Strangely enough, those were the only three singles. So it's kind of weird when you think that, you know, Poison, as you said, I think had five singles, kind of following like the Dr. Feelgood formula. And then this one did not have as many singles. And I'm going to talk about this later. I don't want to steal my own thunder, but these, you'll see it with the sales. This did not sell as well as Flesh and Blood did. So maybe even fans were detecting like this was a little bit of a departure. They, you know, strangely enough, they ripped off Bad Company on a song. The song Electric Love. So anybody, if you're not super familiar with Bad Company, go back and listen to Rock Steady. It's very, very, very similar. So like I said, you mentioned it. It's got some Southern rock, country overtones, and things like that. So they're really letting that side show. Dead Man's Road is really cool. That one is such a... It's more of an epic track. Love's Gone Bad is really cool, too. But, you know, I kind of like One for Rock and Roll. It's weird. It kind of starts off kind of twangy. And then at the end, dude, it goes into like a reggae beat. It's very weird. It's very interesting. I give them credit. It took balls to make that album.
Yeah, I could definitely hear there's a lot of trial and error with a lot of these songs. It sounds like this is them really trying to spread their wings and try new stuff.
Yeah. So I think I know where you're going with this one, but let's hear it. Poison or Cinderella?
Well, to be honest, overall, and since Flesh and Blood does have more songs, I think I am going to lean with Poison on this one.
Yeah, so we're both with Poison on that one. Cinderella gets no votes from either of us. Very, very, very interesting. All right, so now let's face it. We're getting into the band's prime albums, you know, where they were at their peak, where they probably sold the most records. 1988, once again, right? We're seeing a trend. 90. 88, 86. You know, for at least for those albums, they were right in sync with each other. And honestly, they probably would have been in sync with each other for Still Climbing, but Kiefer had some vocal issues that kind of, you know, put that album's, delayed that album a little bit.
Oh, is that right? I didn't realize.
Yeah, he lost his voice completely somewhere in the making of the Still Climbing album. They kind of had to wait for it to come back. Almost think he may have had a surgery or something like that. But now I'm skipping back to that. I gotta work my way back here. Gotta stay focused. Okay, open up and say ah. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so open up and say ah. Like you said, the blues rock is really starting to blend nicely with the glam, and so I think this has a lot of like great tracks, and even from the beginning with Love on the Rocks, which might be my favorite.
I love
but
it.
Even underrated stuff like Back to the Rocking Horse and Good Love. Just a lot of great stuff that's bluesy, but also still accessible to glam fans.
Yeah, I mean, once again, you've got to talk about the Poison singles. And these, this album contains their two biggest songs. They've got to be their two biggest songs. Nothing But a Good Time and Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Those songs are their biggest songs. And, you know, they kind of help to push this album to be the big seller that it is. I love those songs, but you know, they're really, I'm burnt out with them. If I never heard them again, it'd probably be okay. Fallen Angel still is pretty cool. I think that's an interesting, you know, glam rocker song. I love that song. Mama Don't Dance, whatever. You know what I mean? It's okay. But I'm with you, man. Love on the Rocks is probably my favorite song on here. I also like Look, But You Can't Touch. But some of the other ones, man, like when I go back, I don't really want to hear Back to the Rockin' Horse or Good Love or any of that stuff. So this album, as much as I loved it as a kid, and it's definitely an upgrade, I think, from the debut when it comes to songwriting and sound quality. But, you know, I don't go back to this one very often. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, it is definitely rare for me, too. This wouldn't be my go-to album either. So it is interesting to kind of see them get more commercially successful. But maybe not reaching for this one when I want to listen to Poison.
No, me either. Long Cold Winter. What do you think?
Yes, okay. Well, Long Cold Winter. So this is a big shift for me because I was kind of surprised with the bluesy sound with the Bad Seamstress Blues, but I, you know what? I think on this one it works. It didn't work for Heartbreak Station for me personally, but I think on this one it's definitely a nice balance of the glam and the blues.
Yeah, man. I love this album. I saw them on this tour, and it was just an amazing show. It was them with Winger and Bullet Boys. What a freaking killer triple bill, man. And I just remember, like, Tom Kiefer coming down on the piano and everything from the ceiling. It just was a cool show, and it's a great album. And one thing that I was kind of talking about with the Poison is Poison's got the strong singles, but some of the deep tracks are kind of whatever. This album has great deep tracks, and it's got everything. It's just a complete good album. So I'm wicked into it. You know, Gypsy Road's great single. Obviously, Don't Know What You Got Till It's Gone was huge. Coming Home, really cool. You know, like a acoustical rock type song. And even the songs that weren't released are like super cool. Second Wind, Fire and Ice. Yeah, and you're right. This was that perfect mix of the blues. You know, they put just a little bit in there. It was really cool. And then I think they just went off the deep end when they did Heartbreak Station. But I love this album. I'm just going to say it right now. I'm giving this one to Cinderella. How about you?
I am also giving it to Cinderella, easily.
All right. So the debuts, and one thing we can we got to just mention this. For some reason, somebody found that cover of the Poison one to be offensive, and they had to block off the face and just have the eyes of the tiger tongue girl or whatever that was on the cover. So another one. Weird. Today, that wouldn't faze anybody, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I think that one is also censored on my version, so yeah. That's funny to see.
Just the eyes. Okay, back to these debuts, the covers. Iconic covers, right? You've got these guys in their biggest mode of glam ever. You know, it doesn't get any more stereotypical 80s glam than Look What the Cat Dragged In and Night Songs, at least with the look of the band. So once again, we'll start with Poison. What are your thoughts on Look What the Cat Dragged In?
Yeah, I was surprised first going into this. Like you said, I looked at the cover and I didn't think that there was going to be any heaviness to be found here, but I was pretty surprised. Specifically, the title track won me over a lot back in the day. And then some of the other singles I thought were a little cheesy. I think I agree with what you said for open up and say, oh, I think that applies here. There's a lot of, you know, cheesy stuff that may be a little cringy, but it's definitely surprisingly good when I listen to most of it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's no doubt that this is a glam metal classic. You know what I mean? There's nothing I can say that can change that. It's definitely raw. You know what I mean? It's not overproduced. It was done on a very small budget, and it made a lot of money, which was a good business decision for everybody involved. Once again, super strong singles. Cry Tough, Talk Dirty to Me, I Want Action, I Won't Forget You. Another song that kind of came into its own over the years is Look What the Cat Dragged In, because that wasn't released, but you know, it's always been a live staple. Things like Hair Nation have picked up on that song and play it a lot. But I got to say, man, once again, for me, Poison not delivering on the deep tracks, you know, Number One Bad Boy and Let Me Go to the Show, they're not bad, but they're just not great. You know what I mean? So they're just there. You know, it's okay, but like you said, I feel the same way. Loved it as a kid, but when I go back, I'm kind of, you know, some of them are just like, just kind of whatever. You know, they're not huge, not a lot of huge standouts besides the singles for me.
Exactly. No, I totally agree.
Okay, Night Songs. What do you think?
Night Songs. So for this, maybe more so than the Poison album, this one really surprised me with how heavy, especially
it's
with
heavy.
That opening title track. I mean, Night Songs to me is, that's always stuck out of my mind when I was getting into glam metal, and then it just keeps delivering. Even with, you know, ballads like Nobody's Fool, I was totally won over with the fact that these guys could just have a nice hard rock sound that wasn't really cliche, I don't really think at all, compared to Poison by comparison.
Yeah, this is an awesome album. I mean, I don't even know if it's either this or Long Cold Winter for me for what their best album is. I'm not really sure what to go with, but you know, this has the deep tracks once again, and this has the singles. Actually, probably the singles, they weren't as catchy and as cool, you know, as Poison's. Poison's definitely, I think, did better, you know, on MTV and all that kind of stuff. But this is definitely, you know, Nobody's Fool was huge. Somebody Save Me was big. Shake Me was a single, but it really didn't do much. Kind of similar to Poison. Poison released Cry Tough, and it didn't do much. Shake Me really didn't do much. So it's kind of interesting to look at both of those. These albums took a little while to really pick up. Yeah, I love this album. I actually prefer this, I think, this heaviness of this album over the blues stuff. Maybe just a little bit. Just super cool deep tracks, man. Back Home Again, Push Push, and From the Outside. It's just classic. And you're right. Night Songs is super, like a slow, heavy type of a song. And it feels like they played that early in their set. And they had all the lights with the purple smoke. And I'll never forget it. It was just so epic. It's an epic track. And just a classic debut.
Yeah, and for me, one of the standouts was Once Around the Ride. Definitely metal-leaning as the others.
So I'm assuming we're both going with Cinderella on this one, yes?
You are right, yes. Night Songs.
Okay. So where we stand right now, 1-5. So Cinderella's got 5 and Poison has 3. So that's kind of where we stand right now. So Poison's a little bit of a deficit. So let's talk about each individual member. And we'll talk just about the original members, because there was a couple guys that filtered in toward the end in both bands. But for the most part, they've had a stable lineup that, you know, all reunited, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. Let's just go with the singers, man. Brett or Tom? This is tough.
Yeah, you know, I know that, you know, Bret Michaels, he is, you know, probably underrated compared when he's compared with all the other glam singers. But you know what? I really like the grit that Tom Kiefer provides. I think I'm going to go leaning towards Tom because I just think it's a bit more raspy, a bit more blues, a little bit more of an Aerosmith style. So I think I'm going to go with Tom.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's definitely an Aerosmith thing and AC/DC to an extent. You know what I mean? So I think that's what Tom brings to it. Obviously, I think he kills Brett when it comes to the range. Obviously, he sings really high. But you know what? I'm going to go with Brett, because ever since I was a kid, there was something cool about the sound of his voice. Obviously, he had a cool look and everything. I'm going to go with Brett. He's got more of a character voice, and almost like a crooner. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't sing super high, and neither does Alice Cooper. And in some respects, not that he sounds like Alice Cooper, but it's just that type of a voice. It's distinct. It's like a character, like a crooner. I dig it, man. And it's very glammy. You know what I mean? It kind of personifies glam, like the kind of that whiny, you know, voice, kind of voice that he has. And I dig it, man. I'll be honest. There's, you know, I've always sung off and on in my life, and that's somebody who I always tried to emulate. And I'm going with Brett, and he's definitely unique. I like him.
Yeah, he's definitely more true to the glam merit, so that does make sense.
Let's go to drums. Fred Coury or Ricky Rocket?
You know, honestly, you know, no disrespect to Ricky Rocket, you know, I do recognize that he's not always put up there with the greats, but, you know, Fred Coury does have an extensive discography, and so I do kind of see him as a more well-rounded drummer, definitely a little bit more prominent, especially in Cinderella, but I'm going to have to go with Fred. I just think he's got the talent a little bit more.
Well, here's where we're going to differ again. I'm definitely going with Ricky Rocket. And I'll say this. So for Fred Coury, the only album that he's on is Heartbreak Station. He's not on any other Cinderella album. So it's hard to gauge, because the two albums that are really, really, that I really, really like by this band, he's not on them. So it makes it kind of tough. And not saying that the drumming is bad on Heartbreak Station, but as we said, Heartbreak Station is more of a scaled back album, so we're not getting like some crazy drum performance. Ricky Rocket, as much as he may have not been out of the gate some spectacular drummer, I think he had a pretty distinct sound of what he did and the way he did it. He's very visual, you know what I mean? He does a lot of you know, spinning the sticks and moving around and putting his hand up, you know, while he hits the snare and all that kind of stuff. I can see that in my head. And like you said, like we were talking about with some of those later albums, if you look back and you go from like the first album to the stuff he was doing on Flesh and Blood and on Native Tongue, really underrated, and I think he's really developed, you know. So I've got to go with Ricky Rocket, man. I think he's really unique, and I think he really put out some crazy interesting stuff, especially on those later albums.
Yeah, no, I definitely got no shade against Ricky, but yeah, it is close.
All right, let's go with the bass players here. This is going to be tough, because no offense to either of these guys, they're competent, but I don't really think the bass was ever in the forefront of either of these bands. So by flip of a coin, man, who are you going to go with?
Yeah, you know what? You are right. I agree. It's a little bit hard to pick out. I'm going to give it to Bobby Dahl.
Nice.
I just think he's a bit more prominent. I can probably identify it a lot more closer as opposed to Eric Brittingham. It's just I don't really hear it there.
Yeah, it's tough. You know what I mean? I think Bobby, same as Ricky, the bass was kind of coming out more when you listen to Flesh and Blood and Native Tongue. You know, obviously one of his most famous bass lines is probably somebody who just started to play bass could play, right? With that skinny bop. You know, it's just one note. Yeah. Brittingham is solid. You know, he does a nice job with the backups and everything that he plays works. I think he had a cooler look when he came out. I mean, that dude had some pretty rocking hair, like in 1986. So just based on that initial image alone, I'm going to go with Eric Brittingham. So I'll give it to him.
Yeah, you know, that is true. I kind of forget that part of it. Yeah, it is a bit more visual, too.
Yeah, he had the good visual. Both of them had pretty good stage presence, but something about that huge blonde hair, man, he had the look. All right, now this is where we, you know, we'll end with the lead guitar players. But here, this is tough, and I'll tell you why it's tough, because Tom Kiefer is essentially the lead guitarist in Cinderella too. You know what I mean? Because especially if you look through as these albums progress, Jeff Labar did less and less guitar solos through Cinderella. So Tom is more known as the vocalist, but he does a lot of the leads. So Jeff Labar or CC DeVille, man, who are you going with?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, yeah, Tom does, he's a bit more prominent in that role, but I do think, I think Jeff Labar overall is, I'm going to give it to him. You know, I think CC's very underrated. I don't really see him as a fill-in or anything. I think he is very talented, and he was listening to all the right bands. But I just think Jeff Labar, as far as the albums that I've listened to more, I think I lean more towards Jeff.
Yeah, I'm going to go with CC on this one because I just think CC has a pretty obnoxious way of playing. It's, you know, a lot of those squeals and the bends and the whammy bars and all that kind of stuff. It's really flashy and it's really, it's just raunchy, man. I like it. And I think it fits the music perfectly. As soon as you hear it, you know who it is. No disrespect to Jeff Labar. He did a lot of cool solos, tasteful stuff, like stuff on Coming Home. He does that solo. It's very tasteful, but maybe not as in your face. And I think for this kind of music, in your face kind of works. But I'm telling you, I don't know, man. Have you seen what CC looks like today? He posted a picture of himself a few days back on Instagram. He has a big-ass brown beard. You can't really see his hair, but the way he looks today is a far cry from the CC of 1986.
That's right. I did see that picture, and I'm curious if he can still play, because if he could still do it, then that's pretty cool, you know, if he's still shredding.
Yeah, and, you know, rest in peace, Jeff Labar. Jeff, you know, was a great talent, you know, really a great utility guy, because he could do backups, and he could play rhythm, and he could do the leads. He did everything, and while doing all of that, he was still flipping his guitar around, you know, spinning it. So,
yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, he definitely had the style, the swagger. So, yeah, I do definitely see the appeal.
Now, were you able to catch any of these guys live in recent years, or have you watched concert videos, or what do you think of their live performances?
No, I think, yeah, you know, I do definitely agree with you that Poison definitely had the aesthetic, they had the energy. I can imagine, you know, even if people don't admit it today, you know, that was still a pretty cool concert, you know, them sliding outside of the tongue in the 80s, the 80s aesthetic. And, you know, Cinderella too, opening up for David Lee Roth, coming out with the Aerosmith style. Yep. I just, all the videos I see, man, it just looks really awesome.
I was lucky to catch both of these bands, you know, in similar eras. I caught, like I said, I caught the Long Cold Winter tour in 88, and then I saw the Flesh and Blood tour in 1990. And I'd have to just say it was a draw. You know, not that I was even going to count this as a point, but they were both really good live, really solid bands. To me, sounded pretty much like the record. Poison especially, man, Flesh and Blood, they had those... the laser girls that danced with them, and they had green lasers shooting all over the place, and they had the poles that they were swinging down. I mean, it was like a jungle gym, the stage. It was good times, man. And like I said, same thing with Cinderella. They put on a great show, and they used a lot of the purple lights and everything to kind of, you know, create that Cinderella vibe that everybody knows about. But yeah, if you go back and watch some of the live performances, especially, I think you talked about how Cinderella played like Talk Is Cheap in 87. You go back and you watch that video. I think it's from Tokyo. But anyways, yeah, I mean, those are great, great concerts. You know, real tight, competent band. Where Poison maybe were also tight, but, you know, maybe a little sloppier because I think they put more into the show.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. And, like, it was a high-energy performance as opposed to trying to be super technical and getting everything down just right like Cinderella. So, aesthetic-wise, I think Poison definitely does have the wider appeal.
So, based on our votes here, Cinderella takes the cake. They are at 9, and Poison were at 7. So, it was a super close matchup. I pretty much knew that it would be because, like I said, these bands are so similar. They got such strong musicians, strong songs, just the cream of the crop of the 80s. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly, yeah. These two, I didn't realize the similarities, but yeah, it does make sense.
So let me throw this at you. Do you know who sold more records? Who do you think sold more records?
I think it has to be Poison. I mean, it's with the singles alone and the MTV exposure, I just have to imagine it's got to be Poison.
You are right, man. Poison definitely sold more records. And it's like about a lot. This is just in the United States. They probably all sold records all over the world, and this isn't part of it. But in the United States alone, Poison was about 11.5 million, and Cinderella were like $7 million. So, you know, not terrible with Cinderella, but not as much as Poison. This is what's cool about it. Debuts in the U.S. both sold $3 million apiece. So they're dead even, right? Now you get to the second albums, and Long Cold Winter's $3 million, and Open Up and Say Ah is $5 million. So big difference there, right?
Right.
And then I talked about that drop-off that kind of happened. And I, you know what, man? I think this was kind of happening for everybody. And I don't think as fans, especially if you were like there back in the day as a young fan, you didn't know what albums were selling. You didn't know how many units they were pushing. But even as soon as 90, people talk about like 91, 92. Even at 90, you're seeing a drop-off because Cinderella only sold 1 million of Heartbreak Station. That's a big drop. And Poison only sold 3 million of Flesh and Blood. So we're talking, those are pretty big drop-offs from where they were in 1988. The sucky part is hitting the 90s. So Poison went gold with Native Tongue in 1993. And at this point, Still Climbing didn't even certify anything. So
yeah, it's surprising to see. And I just have to imagine that's the grunge influence kind of steering MTV away from a lot of the, you know, the star-studded glam bands. And so that's unfortunate to see such a big shift, even though the music really didn't change all that much in those 4 years.
I guess looking back, you don't realize, you know, how crucial timing is with all this kind of stuff. You know, when you look at Poison, 93 is kind of late, right? I know they lost CC. They probably should have had another album out by 92 because things were happening really fast. 93, they did okay, but they were nowhere near what they did in 90. And then just look at one more year out with Cinderella, you know, it's not even a gold album. So it just shows you how these were crucial times. You know, if these guys could have dialed it back maybe 2 years or a year, they might have had maybe a million seller or at least a gold album. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. The lack of, if they had the Van Halen schedule of releasing something once a year, they probably would have had a greater advantage.
Exactly, man. Well, hey, this was great. I know people will enjoy putting their two cents in on this because, like I said, they're very similar. They had a similar trajectory. You know what I mean? They kind of came out right at the same time, were big in the same era, you know, were loved by MTV. Toured through all the same years and then kind of bottomed out about at the same time. So definitely very similar careers.
Yeah, for sure. And it's sad to see it, you know, but there was plenty of good records and plenty of deep tracks for people to discover.
For sure, brother. Well, hey, always a pleasure talking with you, man. You take care.
Hey, you too, man. Thank you, Mike.
Well, that was a fun one, talking some glam metal with Aaron. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Rock on!